Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Today, we have a summary of Mel Robbins. In this episode, Dr. Caroline Leaf, a world-renowned psychoneurobiologist, shares insights from her extensive research on the mind-brain connection and the impact of thoughts on our lives. She emphasizes how our mental state can shape our future and offers tools for those feeling trapped in negative thinking. Discover how to transform your mindset and reclaim control over your thoughts. Remember to follow us on X and Instagram and on our website, podsummarizer.xyz. And now, let's begin.
This brain does absolutely nothing except what you tell it to do with your mind.
Dr. Caroline Leaf is a world-renowned researcher and a psychoneurobiologist. Since the early 1980s, she has been researching the mind-brain connection, the formation of memory, and she is also one of the original pioneering researchers to figure out that your brain can change. She is also the author of 18 best-selling books that have been translated into 24 languages.
You can't change your story, but you can change what it looks like inside of you and therefore how it plays out into the future. The mind is 99% of who you are. It's fundamental.
Okay, now hold on. I'm wiggling my toes right now thinking my mind is in my toes right now. This is so crazy. I've never heard anybody explain it like that. I just think I got it.
The mind and the brain, the words are used interchangeably as though they're the same thing. And the research shows that 95% of lifestyle diseases come from our thought life. So what the truth is, Mel, is that...
Dr. Caroline Leaf, it is such an honor to have you here in our studios in Boston. It's a pleasure to meet you in person since I've been admiring your work from afar and watching your videos online. Thank you, thank you, thank you for hopping on a plane and being here with us.
Oh, Mel, it's an honor and a privilege. I'm one of your biggest fans and really love what you do. Thank you. It's so great to be here. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm excited to dig into your more than 35 years of research and the tools that you're going to share with us today that come from being a world-renowned psychoneurobiologist. But the way that I want to start is I would love for you to speak directly to the person who is listening to us right now, who feels trapped in negative thoughts, you know, like that their mind is just a complete mess. What would you tell that person who's listening to us right now that feels that way?
95% of people, according to research, actually battle with negative thinking. So it's very common. It's much more common than we realize. But people get stuck there because they're drawn to the imbalance that it creates. You can actually, as soon as you're aware of that, you can change it. And some of the typical things that people get stuck with are things like they feel under pressure, I feel so pressurized. I just can't do it. Black and white thinking is another huge one. It's this or that. Life's a spectrum. Nothing's ever black and white, but it really gets people stuck. Things like my brain won't shut up. You know, that's something that people will often say to me. How do I switch my brain off? That's a common statement that people make. A couple of others are things like my past is haunting me. How do I deal with that? It's coming right into, it haunts, it's there, it's over me all the time.
I appreciate you sharing what you just shared, because I think it's so important that, number one, that the person listening understands that they're not alone in feeling how they feel. And more importantly, number two, that there is something that you can do about it, that it's based in evidence, and that based on your clinical research, it's going to work. And I would love to have you just start by telling the person who's listening what could change about their life or the life of people that they love if they really take to heart everything that you're about to teach us today and they apply it themselves?
That's such a good question. And I think the biggest thing that I have found over the nearly 40 years I've been in this field and reached now a lot of people and 25 years of clinical practice, the key thing that is so helpful, and that is that your mind is not your brain. They're not the same thing, and that you can manage your mind. You can actually change your mind and change your brain. You're not stuck. I think that's absolutely key for people.
Dr. Leaf, you just said that the brain is different from the mind. What does that mean?
Yeah, and that's the key question, because when you get that concept, it changes your life. It brings hope. We have a lot of messaging for about 40 years now, where we are, the mind and the brain, the words are used interchangeably as though they're the same thing. So what the truth is, Mel, is that your brain and your body are your physical part of you. So I've got a little brain down here. Let me grab a little brain. Okay, so this brain does absolutely nothing except what you tell it to do with your mind.
Okay, now hold on. Let me see if I can understand this, because if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see that she has a little model of a brain. It looks like two chicken cutlets together.
It does.
And you're basically saying that on its own, that blob right there that mm-hmm. we call the brain, the physical structure, does absolutely nothing on its own.
On its own. Okay. Nothing on its own.
So then what is the mind?
So the mind is the energy force that actually drives the brain and makes it work, which is enabling us to have a conversation and part of memory and remembering what we're saying and so on, because your mind is doing the work. So the easiest way to understand this is that if you die within seconds of your heart stopping, under 20 seconds, your brain basically, that's it, and your body disintegrate. So the brain and the body disintegrate. What's the difference between a dead person and an alive person? It's actually your mind. So mind is a big word, and it represents your spirit, your soul, whatever word you want to use. It's that Mel-ness. It's your ability to perceive what I'm saying, to think and feel and choose about that, to love, to have relationships, to the way you see the world, the way you learn knowledge, the way you perceive every moment of every day. That's mind. That mind drives your physiology. So the mind makes the brain work. It makes the genetics and the neurohormones and the neurochemistry. It makes the heartbeat. If you didn't have a mind, your heart couldn't beat. It's your mind that's making your heartbeat, that's making your lungs work, that's making you breathe. So it handles your mental aspects, your psychological aspects. It handles your neuro aspects, and it handles your biological. So psycho, neuro, biological. So I'm actually a psychoneurobiologist looking at this relationship, this network that we have. And the interesting thing, Mel, is that the mind is 99% of who you are. It's fundamental. It's the prism through which life is processed. The brain is just a host. So the mind is taking this conversation and putting a copy of it into the brain, and that then activates the brain to respond chemically and electromagnetically and genetically, and then it wires this conversation. As we're talking, it's wiring it into the brain. But the mind's doing the work. So you with your mind and your listeners, they're taking my words, which are electromagnetic impulses, taking those into the mind zone. We've got like a zone around us of electromagnetic field. It's a field of energy. It's exactly the same energy that runs your cell phone.
With the understanding that the mind shapes our reality, the discussion shifts to the challenges faced in neuroscience, particularly regarding brain trauma and the potential for recovery through innovative approaches.
This neuroscience lecturer was saying, okay, so once you've got brain damage, once you've had trauma, that's it. You've got to teach your patients to compensate. And I immediately remember putting up my hand. Now, this is back in the 80s. I'm a female. It's in science. There's majority males in my class and majority male lecturers. And there was bias. And I immediately put up my hand and I said, I wasn't trying to be difficult, but I challenged that and said, but we constantly are changing, growing, learning, all the stuff that philosophers have spoken about for thousands of years. So therefore, that means that our brain must change, because our brain is the host. Our brain hosts our mind, and the brain has got to change. So this professor kind of facetiously said, well, go do research. I thought, well, let me do that. And I started working with people with traumatic brain injuries and saying, okay, well, if I can help them manage their mind, if I can help them rebuild and change how they're thinking, can that change the brain? I took people that had severe traumatic brain injuries. And
so give me an example. What is a patient that has severe
I'll tell you a story. Tell you one of my most amazing stories that I tell, I've been telling the story now since then, and I have permission to tell it, with one of my patients called Lee. And she, I had just started this research, and Lee was a 16-year-old, and she had a terrible, her and her brother had a terrible car accident. She was thrown far from the car, and she went into a coma. In that time, in the 80s, if you were in a coma for longer than 8 hours, the brain damage was considered irreversible. But these parents were, we're not going to accept this. There's no ways that this is going to be the case. And they said, look, please. And they begged me. So I said, okay, well, if you prepare to work with me, we're going to work together. And that's what we did. And we worked for 8 months. Now,
and so you've got their daughter was thrown from a car.
Yeah.
She's in a coma.
Yeah.
The parents are told after 8 hours, there's irreversible brain damage.
Exactly.
And I think, and you know, like, even without being a doctor, it makes sense because you're like, okay, you've been thrown from a car. There's clearly damage, physical damage to the brain.
Exactly.
And there's nothing that can be done. And now you enter Dr. Leaf and you're like, oh, no. We're going to look at the mind, the thing that's wiggling your hands and your toes. And we're going to see if we can actually use the energetic power system.
You got it.
To reverse the traumatic brain injury?
Yes. So they didn't reach out to me in the coma. They reached out to me when she'd come through the coma and she was sort of functioning, but at a second grade level. This is a 16-year-old who's now almost 17, who can't even function at a second grade level.
Got it. And it's due to the traumatic brain injury that she experienced during the car accident.
Exactly.
So enter Dr. Leaf, and what happens?
So then I said, okay, we'll try this. We'll work together 3 days a week, 2 hours each time, but you're going to have to work in between. I mean, this is the key thing, Mel. What I want to say is that I can give you these techniques. You can help anyone but at the end of the day, you have to do the work. And we worked through I developed the 5-step process, I developed the theory clinically. And after 8 months, not only did this child restore function, she went back to school. Now, she had missed most of her 12th grade at this stage. And she was an average student before, so getting, you know, like C's and D's and whatever, didn't do very well. She goes back to school. She's got to catch up most of her 12th grade year. That was her goal. She did it. She finished school with her peer group. She finished with flying colors. Like, for example, she suddenly became a brilliant mathematician. She was brilliant at math. She went on to get a university degree. Her emotional, cognitive, social, emotional, all of that changed. She had a funny sounding voice because she had damage to her larynx. She couldn't walk properly. So there were physical things. But mentally, she restored.
First of all, it's extraordinarily compelling where you've got somebody with a traumatic brain injury and using the 5 steps that you're about to teach us today, the fact that you can help somebody in these severe traumatic cases to use the mind to heal the brain and to change the way that you experience life and to change the functioning of your mind and your body, that is so exciting. And it also gives me hope because I feel like whether you're listening right now and you're struggling with a messy mind, you overthink, you beat yourself up, you're just like can never kind of focus, or you can't let go of worry or rumination, or you have somebody that you love that has concussion damage or that has experienced trauma. I'm excited because if those extreme cases are cases where you have been able to use these 5 steps to leverage the mind and the power and the energy to change somebody in that situation's experience of life and the way that their brain functions, I think this would work for all of us.
We're human. If you're human and you're alive, you have a mind and you need to know how to manage your mind. And this is, you're quite right, Mel, you've summarized it so beautifully. It's mind management. That's essentially what we need.
So Dr. Leaf, though, the mind management technique and neurocycling that you're going to teach us, this 5-step approach, based on your clinical research, you can use it to both better manage stress and burnout and anxiety and depression, and you can also use your mind to heal the trauma from violent things that happen from the outside world.
Exactly. So one is the healing management process, the other is the managing process. What's really key here is to understand the levels of mind. And so the question you asked me earlier on is that how does the same system work for everyone? It sounds like a magic trick. It sounds too good to be true. So first of all, there's years of science behind this. Patients that sit in front of me that have been through sexual trauma, they're not going to want to know about a complex scientific formula, nor is the traumatic brain injured patient, nor is someone who's a rushed mom, who's dad or whatever, who's just come home. I've got to be able to say, okay, do this, 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 and this. So I had to take complex science, which took me years to turn it into something very, very simple.
I want to just translate what you just said, though, because I think I got it. I think I did.
I'm sure you did.
So basically, if you're in a mode in your life where the stress feels relentless, mm-hmm. or your mind feels very, very negative, if you think about how you explain conversation, that again, your mind is powering your brain and your body.
Yes.
Your mind is literally taking the energetic signals from life.
Mm-hmm.
And then it brings it into your brain and body.
Mm-hmm.
And if your thoughts also start to become negative, I can't handle this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't handle the stress. I have no support. I'm never going to make it through this. Then what happens, you're right, is that you are creating a negative feedback loop inside your body, brain, inside your cells.
Exactly.
And it's why you start to feel so heavy. It doesn't change the fact that you have very real stressful things you're dealing with.
With the understanding of how negative thoughts create a feedback loop, the conversation shifts to practical techniques like the 10-second breathing method that can help regain control and clarity in stressful moments.
So it takes the overwhelm away. An unconscious can handle everything. And you can do it once or up to six times. So 60 seconds of that just to get yourself. So that's an example.
So the 10-second breathing method that you just taught us,
and
that works for the conscious mind.
Yes.
Which kind of pulls you into the moment.
Into the moment,
and that allows you to then do this five-step process.
You're now focused.
Any moment that you feel negative thoughts, a negative emotion, a response that feels like a freeze or an odd edginess, you do the 10-second breath. And then how do we do the neurocycle?
Okay, so gather awareness is step one. The four sentences you ask yourself, what am I feeling? And you answer, I am feeling. And it may be one or two words, frustration, anger.
Nervous. I'm feeling nervous.
There you go. Then you say, where am I feeling this in my body, bodily sensation? And so maybe shoulders are tense or your heart's beating faster or you're sweating, whatever. What are my behaviors? What am I saying and doing? What am I about to say and do? I can feel my face contorting. I can feel myself building up to snap or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth signal, what's my perspective at the moment? How am I looking at the day in this moment? It's going to be a lousy day. I can't handle this. I hate this. So you just gather awareness. So you very, very calmly stand back and observe. You're self-regulating. You are taking control. See, what makes us feel terrible is all of this stuff just coming at us.
It is so messy. It's just like all over the place. And then I don't know how to gather the thoughts because they're all over the place. But now I'm grounding myself.
Exactly.
And by asking, how do I feel?
And it's organized. It's not just random. It's very, very clear what your brain, mind, brain, body network.
Okay. So it's what do I feel?
Yeah.
It's where am I feeling that in my body?
Yes. Body sensation.
It's what am I doing or
behaviors
in response to it.
Mm-hmm.
And what is there's something about my face?
Perspective.
So let me say that again because I want to make sure that the person listening gets this too. How am I feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Where am I feeling it in my body? What are the behaviors, the thoughts, and the kind of
actions? Words.
And what's my perspective or thought about this?
How am I looking at life?
How am I looking at this?
Let's talk
negatively.
About.
I can tell you right now, if it's bothering me, it's like death day. For me.
There we go. So perspective is like putting on a pair of glasses.
Gotcha.
And if it's all broken and shattered and whatever, you can't see. So what is your perspective? Life is lousy. Life sucks. So it's an attitude. It's not a thought yet.
Nothing ever goes my way. I'm going to be alone forever. I always screw up. Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
It's always going to be like this. That's what you want to capture. So what you're doing is you are objectively in a very kind and compassionate and loving way, because this is okay. You got to kind of start out by saying part of that mind, brain, body prep is to say, it's okay to be a mess. All of us are messy. Most of us walk around for most of the day not happy, just going through the motions of life. This whole thing of trying to be happy all the time has also been a disaster. It's really made people feel worse. So part of that first mind, brain, body prep is to really bring in an attitude towards yourself of kindness and compassion. And it's okay to be a mess. This is not Mel. This is
Well, I think
Mel
if you even have the presence of mind to collect yourself and do the 10-second breathing, and now you're gathering information instead of running yourself over mentally.
Exactly.
You are being kind to yourself.
You are, but you.
And what I find, like 9 times out of 10, when I do this, it's the same thing. I've done something wrong. That is the core thing that it comes back to for me. And I think as people start to use your process,
you find that
you start to find it's like, I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. I'm always alone. Like that kind of, for me, it's like I have done something wrong. So once you've asked these four questions and you've gathered the awareness, the second step is reflect.
Yes.
What do you do?
So reflection, if you think of a reflection, you look at yourself in a mirror, you see the reflection of yourself. There's also the concept of a reflection of light through a prism. If you shine a white light through a prism, it comes out
rainbow.
With, yes.
Yes.
So there's depth and there's reflection. So you're reflecting on how am I seeing myself? you know, in relation to those four questions. So you keep very organized. Don't jump all over. So you say, you reflect on, why am I seeing myself this way? And what does it mean? So you look in the mirror and you go deep. Why? And you use the WH questions. The who, the what, the when, the where, the why, the how.
Okay, so how do I do that?
So why am I feeling like this in this moment? Why am I specifically feeling it in my stomach? Is it always in my stomach when I feel this? Where is this happening? Is it only happening at work? Is it happening before? How often is it happening? Is it happening every day or just now and then? So you just start the process. You're not going to solve it all, but it's very specific. I'm looking at myself in the mirror. I'm reflecting back and I'm going deep. Who, when, where, what, why, how.
Got it.
You don't have to answer all of them, but what makes sense to one. Now, those two, three steps, people are pretty good at the meditation, the breathing, all that stuff. They're pretty good at saying how they feel. That's when people crash.
Well, it's sort of like people who go to therapy for years and years and years and just get good at talking about their problems. But don't ever progress forward. Move to the solution part or
exactly.
the attacking
There's
the problem.
There's no moving forward.
So how do we do that here? Because we're now becoming aware of the thing, the cycle that you're normally in, which is very important to separate yourself from it.
Yes.
And you're doing it in a way where you're
very
calm.
Organized, yep. Very calm, very
so
organized.
The next part is right. What am I
writing? So now what we do is we go to, so I've got all this stuff come up. I've got my whole network's now activated. I can change. Now you go into a writing mindstorm phase. So I'm adding the word mindstorm on because that's in the
right a mindstorm.
Mindstorm.
Gotcha.
So it's easy
so
way to understand.
So this is like a tsunami of trash and garbage and toxic crap.
Everything
that's swirling in my brain
related to what you've just done. So
okay.
I hate my boss.
I've made another mistake. I'm about to get fired. I'm a loser. I'm never good
enough.
Exactly.
Okay. All the stuff you threw out at the beginning.
Mindstorm.
That's what you do. So what we did was we calmed. We gathered awareness very specifically. Four questions, four answers. We reflected and started the who, what, when, where, why. So now we're very organized. Notice I keep saying we're bringing order out of chaos. Very specific. When you do that, there's all kinds of neuroscientific things happening. Now that has shone the light on that network. So now that network's got lots of branches. So that's what the third step's doing. It's pulling up all this stuff.
And it might even bring up your shopping list. What am I writing?
So you can, words, phrases, whatever. So this is where it's good to get a blank piece of paper.
Okay.
Draw a circle in the middle.
Draw a circle in the middle. Okay.
Literally draw a circle in the middle.
Okay.
And this is what I call a metacog. It's a big...
A who?
M-E-T-A-C-O-G. Metacog.
Metacog. Okay, I got a metacog circle right here. What am I doing?
It looks a bit like a concept map or a mind map, if anyone knows what those are.
No, I don't.
Okay, so it's... You start in... Okay, never mind. You start in the middle.
Yeah.
Not over here and work left to right, because that limits your ability to think in a broader way.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.